Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Emergency Nine Golf Podcast. Thank you for joining us once again. Jay is alongside. McLean is in Nashville as usual. Getting ready to sneeze. Bless you.
I couldn't hit mute in time for that. Sorry, boys.
You're good. We didn't hear it. You're good. I am Mike Maroney. Thanks again. Thanks for joining us. Sorry for a delayed recording this week. We're doing this on Wednesday night. I've just been out straight the last few nights. So the boys were nice enough to accommodate on a Wednesday. So gentlemen, how you doing? What are you drinking?
Doing good. Doing great. I going with a little Four Roses single barrel tonight. A little different. Haven't had this in a while.
Okay.
That's a little skinnier bottle, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Batch is the big wide one.
Yeah. I like that stuff. It's good.
It is good.
I am doing fantastic.
Love to hear it.
Wife out of town for 7 straight days. I'm at my wit's end.
But you're only on like, you're like halfway through, right? So you're on the.
She didn't get home till Sunday.
Okay. Well, I was trying to be positive there for you.
If we had the podcast this coming Saturday, I'd be on suicide watch. No, all good. I'm just drinking a little bit of Buff Trace. And, good to be back here with you boys.
Awesome. I am drinking water tonight. You know, like I said, I've been running ragged the last few days all over the place. Pretty much been in Leesburg, Northern Virginia, with a small detour back here at Powhatan and then back to Leesburg, Virginia. And so body's a little tired. Mine's a little tired. So just going with water tonight.
Where was it hosted up in Leesburg?
So we're at the Lansdowne Resort. So yeah, I guess we'll start there real fast. I want to shout out this past actually 4 days, we've had our Mid-Atlantic PGA, what we call our super meeting. It was basically 4 days of various activities, meetings, education, seminars, networking events. And so Jay was nice enough to join us. Sunday night was the awards banquet and the Hall of Fame banquet, where we got to celebrate some PGA professionals and induct a couple new Hall of Famers. And I was presented with the Sports Media Award for our efforts here on the podcast. And so thank you, Jay, for joining us. It was a fun night. And then, I guess shout out to, you know, the MAPGA, John Gould, Bob Hines, Christine Alonzo, Ben Smith, and others. As far as the staff there, they did a lot of planning goes into this, these 4 days. And, you know, the last couple of days I was at Teaching and Coaching Summit. And so some of my fellow PGA professionals that are on the education committee that put it on, you know, Sean English, Mark Russo, Bernie Najjar, John Scott Rattan, put on a good show, great speakers, great presentations. So thank you to all those involved. And it was kind of, Sunday night was pretty humbling. So it was fun to be a part of.
I was really impressed with the event. Like they did a great job. They didn't hold anything back. I mean, it was every detail was taken care of. And from the start, from the cocktail hour to the dinner to the schedule of events. I thought it was great. It was a really good event.
Yeah.
Top notch.
Very, very top notch. It was my first time attending, and so I'll try to make it back to some of those even when I'm not getting an award, because it was fun to listen to some of the guys talk of what's, you know, who and what has made them successful. And there's a lot of great golf professionals in this area, and so it was nice to see some of them recognized for their work. So
yeah,
well, and thank you to everyone who, you know, voted the podcast and provided the award to Mike. I think it was, it's really cool to see that we have some supporters out there and guys that listen, maybe more than sometimes we think, but, regardless, it's awesome to be recognized. And I'm glad, Mike, you got to get up there and accept that award.
Yeah. Again, like I said, it was, just as much your award as mine. Even though my name was on it. So,
sorry, boys, it's my award. And my
I didn't choose myself. They could have given it to all three of us. It doesn't have to be a PGA professional, so I'll take it up with the committee.
Yeah, all good. No stress here, buddy.
So let's get into some professional golf. Austin Eckroat gets his first PGA Tour win. Unfortunately, it was a Monday finish. I wasn't able to see a whole bunch of it with at least the final round with what was going on. But yeah, Austin Eckroat, my man Shane, Sugar Shane Lowry, just loves that place and just can't seem to get it done there. But yeah, what were your thoughts on Austin? We'll get to Austin first. You gotta let the winner have his due first.
The guy's been playing some good golf. You know, it's not a name for guys that are following the sport. It's not a new name. He's not a household name yet, but he's certainly someone that is kind of trending in that direction to create a spot for him as a regular in contention out on the PGA Tour. The guy is a great player. That golf course is extremely difficult, by the way. There's more water on that golf course than 99% of golf courses in the world. I don't care if they're Oceanside or not. There is a ton of water on that golf course. You know, formerly the Honda, now the Cognizant. It's a good venue. It's tough to see where it's kind of dropped off from a purse standpoint, from a field standpoint. A lot of guys don't historically enjoy playing that golf course. So you see a lot of the big players now that you've got Bay Hill being a signature event coming right after with a much bigger purse. See a lot of guys that are your bigger names skip it. We had a couple of big names in there, but ultimately not a ton of them. And the funny part is that it is the closest PGA Tour event to most of their homes. It's right there in Gardens, right there off PGA Boulevard. So the fact that we miss a lot of those guys kind of, it sucks to a certain degree because you guys can sleep in your own bed at night. But it goes to show, you know, money is what talks these days. And without these guys, you know, it's tough to watch it without the best players in the world. But the golf course being so difficult and water being in play on so many holes, a lot of guys end up skipping it. So, but back to Austin, you know, the guy shot 65, 67, 68, 67, four rounds in the 60s, normally pay pretty well, 17 under, one by three. My math is horrible. That's why I'm in sales. the guy went out.
You can calculate a commission, though, I bet.
Really good at that. Percentages? Got that nailed. Eric Van Ruyen, you know, not trying to get off of Austin Eckroat, but Eric Van Ruyen threw up a 63 out there. Another guy who's been kind of on that cusp of one of the next top players. I'm not always a fan of the way he dresses, nothing against Grayson, but I hate the jogger look. And especially like he like pulls the jogger up a little bit and shows some ankle. And it's just like, man, I can't tell if you're playing shortstop or if you're getting ready to tee off on the fourth hole. I don't know what's going on. Not a knock to Grayson, not a knock to Eric. Great player. 63 on that golf course is impressive. Shot 28 on the front nine. That is impressive golf. And he was out there early. I mean, he finished like 2 hours ahead of Austin.
Did you see, I had read somewhere, you know, so the Seminole Pro member was on Monday, which is historically always the Monday after the Honda, or now Cognizant, and just star-studded a field as always. We've talked about it the last couple of years on this podcast. And Van Ruyen was in the field, and he went over to Seminole Monday morning because he was already done with his round. So he went over to Seminole and started playing in the Pro member. And Bob Ford had said they had like transportation set up ready to go if they felt like he was going to have to go back and get into a playoff at Palm Beach Gardens.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, they're probably going to send a helicopter for him knowing Seminole.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. What a baller way to like show up for a playoff. Like, can you lose a playoff if you show up in a helicopter? Like Austin's just standing there on the range, like, what's going on here? And he lands it right on the range. Eric and his caddy get out with his sticks. And just like Austin just said, I can't beat that.
No.
I showed up in a helicopter.
I watched the last
five holes and watched Austin play those last couple holes. So watched him play the bear trap, which in my opinion, I know it's kind of people debate when it really starts, but 14 through 17 are pretty difficult holes. I mean, and even 18, it's a par five, but I will say if the wind's blowing, the layup is pretty tough. I mean, you're laying up and it gets pretty narrow. You got water right. If you hit it left in the rough. Now you're giving yourself a really difficult, it's pins always back right. So now you're out of the rough trying to hit it, you know, with wind, with a, you know, mid scoring club, 8, 7, 8, 9 wedge maybe. And you can't control your spin. You've got probably 25, 30 feet worth of green to work with on that right side. So again, the 14 through 17 are really tough holes, and even 18, depending on the circumstances and what you need to do. If you need to make a birdie or something like that, can be tough. But he hit some incredible shots coming down the stretch. He hit a ball left on 14, and that's a tough hole. Pin back right, all sloping down towards the water. He had an incredible bunker shot. I mean, he could easily hit it in the water. He could have left it in the bunker, but he had an incredible shot. He missed the putt. And made bogey, but he still hit an incredible shot there. And then coming down the stretch, I was just impressed with how aggressive he was swinging. Like, there was no hold back. And granted, I don't think, based on watching him swing, I don't think he can have any hold back or any reserve. If he does, he's going to kind of hit it all over the place. It seems like he's got kind of a weak grip and really aggressive with the right hand, right side, and really gets through the ball.
Just to rip through it.
But he stuck to it, and it was kind of cool to see. I was impressed with the shots that he hit. He had a great shot on 16, the par 4. Hit a great shot behind the hole on 17. Not an easy shot. I mean, that we've talked about this before. That was my demise. That 17th hole screwed me and my PGA Tour chances. I hit it in the water on 17, but I mean, it's not an easy hole. It's the same pin, that kind of middle front, you know, tucked up against the edge of the hazard. I mean, they use that same pin. It's a hard pin if you want to make birdie. It's easy to kind of bail out short and left and have a, you know, a 30-footer, but if you need to make a birdie, it's a tough shot. But all in all, I was impressed with how he finished, and, you know, watching him. I was pulling for Lowry. You know, I watched him, and I needed Lowry to do well and some other little golf pools. And I was like, there's no way this guy's – he's not folding. There's no way he's doing this. And when I say not folding, I'm talking about deep Eckert. He was not folding. And Lowry actually played. He hit the ball in the water on 15. He made a bad swing, but after that, he made a couple birdies coming in. So he's not like he just can't seem to get it done. He had a great tournament, finished top five, but he just can't seem to finish it off. I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah. What'd you guys make of how the golf course played? There was a lot of it, especially day one, was super easy. Scoring, I think they set a record for first or single round scoring. You know, there wasn't any wind against Florida. You typically get a lot of wind here. There wasn't any. You know, they have had a pretty poor winter down there. It's been wet. It's been kind of cold. So the grass isn't quite growing as thick and as lush. And so the rough was down a little bit. There was some reports that the PGA Tour was trying to make it a hair easier because they get a lot of complaints from guys that it's so difficult. You know, and plus they're in a tough stretch right now, right? So it's PGA National, then it's Bay Hill, which always plays hard, and then the Players, which always plays hard. And so I think they might have been trying to throw a bone to some of the guys to maybe get them there. Say, hey, we're going to try to make it a little bit easier, not beat you over the head. Now, they also did turn the 10th hole back into a par 5, which basically makes the tournament 4 shots easier, because that is... it played to like a 4.2 scoring average. I mean, it was pretty much a gimme birdie for these guys. Yeah. So that's going to skew the scoring. You know, you can make Eckert's 17 under more like 13 under. But
even 13 under is still pretty low for that golf course.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, he won by 3. So you're 13 and 10, 10, 10, a bunch of guys at 10. I mean, it's still pretty low for that golf course.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you're right. I kind of noticed the same thing, and I was kind of paying attention to the wind and the weather, and it was just non-existent there that first day on the morning round. I mean, every morning round seemed to have like zero wind, which is, you know, if that course doesn't have wind, it's not very long compared to some of the other tour courses. So if you've got no wind, that water is not as intimidating. I think it gets intimidating when you've got the 20 to 30 mile an hour gust and you're not sure what the wind is doing, and you've got water on both sides of the hole. And then it becomes very confusing. Like, what type of shot do I want to play? But when you throw that element out and the wind is not there, you know, then the water is not as big of a deal. And so obviously the guys lit it up, and I know those greens are always not great. I mean, I say not great. It's just comparatively speaking to other tour events. They're just okay. They're very grainy. Now, granted, I'm sure they do everything they can to kind of get rid of as much of that grain as they can, cut them down, roll them and take it out. But it's still, they're still there, you know? So that, I don't know how fast the greens were. It didn't look like they were lightning fast. I felt like I saw a lot of guys just kind of dying putts at the hole. So I didn't see a whole lot of guys run, having balls run away from them. So that, like you said, Mike, I think that was part of it too. They didn't have them rolling 12 and a half or anything like that. They were probably rolling like tour standard 10 and a half, 11.
11 and a half, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I didn't really have any major issues with the setup, and sometimes it just plays a little easier. I think if they had a better winner down there, it probably wouldn't have played quite as easy. Even if they tried to set up easier, probably wasn't going to play.
Yeah.
It was never going to play as hard just because of what's been going on down there. So it's, yeah. Another question for you. Is the PGA Tour off to a really slow start this year? Do we need some fireworks? We haven't had any big names win.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The statement that Paul Azinger made, I don't know that we had necessarily thought about it like that. Did you guys see that?
I saw some of his quotes. I know he kind of went off on a whole bunch of things, and he went off on NBC and all this kind of stuff in an interview.
Well, he said basically it's not a good time for the PGA Tour and professional golf right this moment, because what's ended up happening is that the PGA Tour has become the basically stepping stone qualifier for LIV. And it's taken a lot of big players out of the PGA Tour. If you look at the leaderboards the last few weeks, and I'm not taking anything away from the guys that have been up there. I mean, we've seen some great golf. We see Jake Knapp, an emerging star who hopefully can, you know, keep riding his momentum that he's had and see where he is currently. But on the backside of that, LIV has taken a lot of great players recently, and they have a really good leaderboard when you look at it. Now, mind you, there's a lot of arguments that can be made to whether they're trying as hard and all that. I mean, we call that what it is. But on the backside of it, when you look down the leaderboard at LIV, when it's competing with a PGA Tour event the same week, their leaderboard has been much more attractive in a lot of weeks that they've had both events going on. So it's a very interesting time for the PGA Tour. It's funny to sound, or it's funny to hear that this merger is not closer than it is, because ultimately it sounds like, or from what my perception is, this needs to happen much quicker. We need to get these guys back out there. We need to get more players playing together than what we're seeing right now with the separation. And that's not a LIV or a PGA Tour conversation. It's just saying overall, in the grand scheme of things, we're losing a lot of great players over to LIV. We're not seeing the best players in the world compete together. We are now starting to see a larger segregation than I think any of us would have forecasted years ago. But where it stands right now, we need to get this merger done. We need to get golf back under one umbrella, or at least two overlapping umbrellas, if you will, to where we can start to see some of the best players in the world play together. The majors are what excites me right now, even though a lot of players out there won't qualify because they've gone to LIV.
So I'll get to that point in a second. As far as Azinger's comment, I think it's a little overstated. It's not a feeder tour. Yeah, there's some good players that they have taken, but really the only one that has been taken recently in the last year and a half, 2 years, is Rahm. I mean, the signings...
Tyrrell Hatton.
Yeah, okay, Hatton and Rahm.
He's ranked 17th in the world right now.
Sure, so I missed him. You're right. So the two of them. Other than that, it's been a year and a half since they got anyone big, since Cam Smith went over. You know, because all the other guys were before that. And so I don't think Azinger makes that comment if the top players in the world would have won this spring. If you had a win from, you know, Xander, Victor, Scotty, Rory, then you don't make that comment, right? It's just the top guys on the PGA Tour right now have not been in contention or playing that well.
The timing was convenient to make that comment.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Mike. I think the other way of looking at it would be, if we had all of those guys still playing on the PGA Tour, we would have seen a big name win by now. You have less opportunity for big names to win because we're missing some big names.
Sure. And Rahm won a bunch last spring.
Won a bunch.
He won a bunch last, you know, winter, spring, however you want to phrase it. So I think just a little bit is just the guys aren't playing that well right now. And so we've had a lot of long shots win and some new names and new faces, which I don't always think is a total bad thing. But ultimately, you want the big names playing their best. And that's what's going to get the eyeballs and the viewers and that whole thing.
Well, but whenever you thin out a tour, you open up opportunity for some of those lesser known players.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I agree with you. I love seeing some of these new guys out there playing, but we're not the average golf fan.
Correct.
We're not the mass conglomerate or the mass group of people that are following this that aren't necessarily the junkies the way we look at the sport and are involved in the sport in our daily lives.
And so to your point about getting this deal done, and I texted you guys. So Monday morning we had our spring annual or our annual meeting. And our national secretary of the PGA of America, Nathan Kimes, was there and did a little bit of a town hall and spoke and he addressed the LIV PIF deal. He's like, you know, we're monitoring what's going on because it's going to affect the PGA of America and their business. It's going to affect the PGA Championship. It's going to affect the Ryder Cup. And they're trying to game. They actually have their own. They've created a special committee to basically game out a bunch of different scenarios. If this happens, how are we going to react? If this happens, how are we going to react? If this happens, what are we going to do? And I don't know if I'm leaking something that I shouldn't leak here or not. He didn't say that not to, but so I'm just going to say it. Sorry, Nathan. You shouldn't have shared it with a member of the media. He said it's not close. From everything they've heard, the deal is not close. And the biggest holdup are the players on the PGA Tour. They do not want these guys back. They don't want the LIV guys back. Now, and you've heard kind of some of that stuff. Like, these guys are pissed. There was an undercover pro article in Golf Digest. You know, they basically have a pro write an article and they don't tell you who it is. And the guy speaks honestly. And he was saying that everyone was pissed when Rahm went and they felt betrayed and all this kind of stuff. And these players don't want these guys back. Now, I get that. And I've obviously had my fair share of issues with those guys. But for what's in the best interest of the game, the sport, and if they're now going to grow their own equity of this new PGA Tour enterprises, they need to figure out a way to get them back. At least like 10 guys.
Absolutely.
You can make an argument for 10 guys. And the other ones, if you say no, you go to Q school, fine. There's about 10 guys that you could say, let's try to find a way to get these guys back on the tour if this deal goes through. Because it's in the best interest of the professional game of golf. And therefore, now, if this is a for-profit entity, it'll be in the best interest of their bank accounts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you've got to
find a way to get these guys back. And again, I came up with a scenario of whatever you've qualified for, whatever you've done on the PGA Tour, allow them to utilize that status to regain their card. I have no problem with that. You can't take away wins from a Dustin Johnson, a John Rahm. You know, Tyrrell Hatton's kind of an interesting case because I don't know. I'd have to look a little deeper into what he's done. But career money list wise, if these guys have the opportunity to go over there and utilize starts and based off of what they've done previously and where they rank on these lists, let them in, let them play. It does benefit the greater good of the sport. I get that the players may not love the scenario, but I don't think there's a scenario that works out where everyone is happy. That's not real life. It's not real life in any scenario. Every decision makes someone happy and someone upset. That's just kind of what the real world is these days. Mm-hmm. So on the backside of that, excuse me, if the players aren't happy, I get it. But we have to look out for more than just that. We want to keep the players happy, and we want to make sure that they're happy with what they're doing. They're also getting paid a ton of money to do what they do. So on the backside of that, it's like, hey, this is what's better. This is what benefits the overall game. That's where I think.
Well, and that goes back to a point I've made multiple times in this podcast months ago that all the part of the blame to all this lies with the players too, not just the executives, but the players who have not put the fan first or the product first and have been selfish in this. And this is another case of the players being selfish or jealous or petty or all the above. And listen, guys, yeah, it sucks. I hate it too. But we got to get everyone back together here, or this is going to go down a very bad path and you're just going to lose people.
Yeah.
But by people, I mean fans and sponsors and TV partners.
Yeah, if you can look that far forward, I think some of these guys are probably looking at, hey, this is the competition, and if you want to weed yourself out and go to a different tour, great, more opportunity for me to win. Like, so I can see where the player looks at it like, hey, man, screw you. You left. You took a bunch of money. Why should I just let you back? I should have taken the money. You know, now I've got I stayed because I wanted an opportunity to compete for the bigger events. You know, the events that were had more, more history, I guess you could say. And now all of a sudden you can leave and take that money, and I should just let you back in with no penalty and no big deal because I'm trying to grow the game. I can be honest, like if I were a player, I'd be like, I don't care about that.
Sure.
Like if this is your profession, you're like, I'm doing everything I can to try to win tournaments and make as much money as I can. And if I'm not going to do that by taking a spot on the LIV Tour, then I certainly am not going to just welcome these guys back, because I think it's going to be for the greater good of the game. Because you know what? I may not be here next year. I need to get everything I can get today, this year, right now, this month, this week. Screw those guys. I don't want you to come back. Now, I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying that's, I guarantee that's what they're thinking. They're like, why am I supposed to be the ambassador of the game of golf here and try to do the right thing when they didn't do the right thing? And yet I'm supposed to I'm continually asked to do the right thing. Let them back in because that's better for the game. But it's not better for my wallet, because I'm playing against John Rahm and Dustin Johnson and Cam Smith and, you know, all these guys that are good players. I'm not going to finish as high as I would. So
no, I can
certainly see why they would be upset and not as willing to let them in. I mean, I think, but if you have the right mindset for some of the higher level guys like a Jordan Spieth and that are kind of up there, Rory, I don't even know where Rory stands these days, but if you're looking at it from a sense of, okay, let's get you back in because it's going to make it more competitive, because it's going to bring more sponsors back to the game and it's going to bring more money. Great, but this is your penalty for coming back, and that penalty is going to go back to the players who did not make that jump or didn't take that money grab. So I feel like there's got to be something just to allow these guys to just come back, no big deal, because they all denounced their PGA Tour status. I mean, all these guys said,
I don't want to sign it.
They all resigned their PGA Tour status. Like, okay, if you make an open statement and say that, then You've got to pay the price to get back on, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. I don't disagree.
Yep. I don't know. I just think it's a long ways off and there's a lot to be figured out. And just like Bryson said, we just got to drop the egos, guys, on all fronts, on all fronts.
Let's look at it though. This week, I mean, if we're really comparing apples to apples, these tournaments are not that far off. I mean, what did the LIV Tour had how many, 55 guys last week? Something like that.
54.
54 guys. And this week we have 68.
Yeah.
I know they're playing one extra round, no cut, but I mean.
There is a cut this week.
There is a cut to what? Like, is this?
50,
is
I think it's 50.
50? Okay. So they're doing the same thing that they've done in the past. But I mean, 68 guys with 18 guys getting cut. LIV Tour, 54 guys, no cut, three rounds. I mean, granted, there's one extra round. There is a cut of 15 guys, 18 guys, but they're not that far off to whereas one event's going to get, you know, world ranking points, and the other event is going to get nothing. I could see where they would. I could see the argument. You know, I'm not saying that they should get the same amount of world ranking points as the PGA Tour, but it's like, if you're going to say that we should get nothing, and these events are very similar.
Yeah, but it's more the whole setup of the whole tour. The tour has to qualify for the points, and so it's the whole
I understand that
setup of that.
The process of how it all happens and the rules and the qualifying setup, but if you look at each tournament for what it's worth, and the the quality of golf, and which is what determines whether this should, you know, every week you get world ranking points determined on how many players are there and the ranking of those players that are there. So, I mean, that's part of it. So
now and the PGA Tour is doing themselves a disservice now that how the OWGR changed the structure last fall. The PGA Tour is doing themselves a disservice because there's not as many points available for these limited field events.
Dropping them. I agree. But to say that the PGA Tour and this, they're running this event, if you're comparing the two tournaments,
sure,
there's no reason that this event this week at Arnold Palmer Invitational with 68 guys, 69, 68, whatever it is, it's below 70.
Yeah.
That they're playing four rounds. There is a small cut, but only, you know, like you said, only 18 guys are going to miss the cut compared to 54 guys where they play three rounds and everyone plays all three rounds. They're not that far off.
In a vacuum, they're not that far off.
And if you compare the field, I mean, I would still say the PGA Tour, obviously, this is the top guys. It's still stronger. But the top of each tour, it's pretty comparable in terms of the best players. Like the top 10 guys for the LIV, top 10 guys in this in the API. I mean, you're looking at top tier guys that are playing in President's Cups and Ryder Cups and so forth. So,
well, and I think my biggest problem is that it just seems like this thing has gotten way more politicized than it needs to be. Seems like at this point, decisions are being made off of politics. This doesn't feel like it's equitable. It doesn't feel like they're looking at just the nuts and bolts and saying, yes, these guys deserve, these guys don't deserve, quality of play, quality of field. Doesn't feel like it's being acknowledged. It feels like there is a relationship with the OWGR and the PGA Tour that is getting in the way of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's the four majors that essentially made this decision.
Yeah.
So
it just doesn't feel on the up and up. This is the best way I can say it. There's not, the OWGR doesn't seem like a neutral third party that is judging the golf tournament and the field versus judging decisions and other things that come along with it. And don't get me wrong, there's arguments to be made on that. There's arguments to be made on where the money comes from and, you know, what they're doing. But on the backside of it, the way I look at it, if you are the official world golf rankings, quality of field needs to go into play. And ultimately, the quality of play, the tournaments, it needs to be judged better. I don't think it's being judged better. I think these guys should get world golf ranking points. I truly do. If you look at the field and the guys that they have over there right now, we all know that these are some of the best players in the world. No one here would argue that fact. You're not going to tell me that John Rahm, Tyrrell Hatton, Dustin Johnson, the list goes on of guys, Cam Smith, aren't the top players in the world. And where they're playing, the guys that are playing against them, they all deserve to be gaining something from it.
Yeah, I just have a problem with how some of them are on that tour. If they all qualified in a meritocracy to be on that tour, fine. But there are some really shitty players, and I don't understand why they should be getting world ranking points just because they play on LIV and they happen to have a good week against those guys.
You could have the same argument for some of the subsidiary tours out there that gain world ranking points. You know, there was always a big argument from the PGA Tour players about the Asian tour and the amount of world ranking points that they were getting and getting into some of these majors. I'm not taking anything away from anyone.
Sure.
All I'm saying is that the thoughts that we're thinking of how they got there and what they did to get there, all of that needs to go out the window where the OWGR needs to be a neutral third party and ultimately say, all right, guys, this amount of top players in the world, we have a certain amount of guys that are still ranked amongst the top players in the world. They should be generating ranking points based off of the quality of field. That's my whole thing about it, is that it just doesn't feel like decisions are being made without the politics being taken aside.
But I also don't feel bad for them because the
sure that's your personal feeling.
The regulations were set decades ago, and you decided to make the rules the way you did, and then Greg Norman goes and lies to all the players and tells them, "No, don't worry about it. We're going to get OWGR points," and so.
I get what you're saying. You're not wrong. All of that needs to be put into a bucket and put aside. We need to judge purely on the golf, purely on the quality of field.
Yeah. I do agree with that, McLean. I agree with both of you guys. I think that the way that they got there, you're right. I think there's some animosity and some resentment to, in terms of how these guys got on the tour. And you're like, oh, that's bullshit that you're out there. And you basically are just out there because you got a payday. But the fact of the matter is now you've got a tour with a bunch of, you know, top 20 players, or let's say 20 of the top 100 players in the world. And the fact of the matter is you've got a tour with events that should be earning some type of world ranking points because of the strength of the field. I'm not going to say how much. I'm not saying it should be more than other tours. I'm just saying there should be something. They should be getting something regardless of how they got there.
I would be totally fine with them getting world ranking points if there was open qualification and people could freely lose their card and get relegated.
Yeah. I mean,
those two are the holdups for me.
I agree with what you're saying, like from a structural standpoint, in terms of setting up a tour. But in terms of what we have now, the product that we have, you have a bunch of the top players in the world. So like, if you can strip all that away, like how they got there, how they can lose their car, like these guys, they've already proven themselves up until this point. So it'd be different. If there were all no names, then that would be one thing. Like, hey, why should you get world ranking points? I don't know who any of you guys are, but
the fact
that they have this tour, when you've got major champions on the tour, we know that they have the pedigree. So it's just connecting the dots between the world ranking and the pedigree of the players based on their resume. You have a tour that should warrant, you know, world ranking points. How much? I don't know. Maybe it's at the bottom tier, but it should be something. Yeah. And they can build on that, in my opinion, to your point, Mike. You need to set up some type of qualifying system to where it's not just one tournament with that's hand selected, which is
three guys, and where guys cannot come off the, you could finish last in every event, but if your contract is still active, you can't come off the tour. Like, I just don't agree with those. I don't care. I mean, holes, no cut. Fine. There's ways to work around that. And the OWGR has already said that. It's kind of built into some of their formulas.
But that's an operational thing. Again, I think if it were players that we have not heard of, then that would be fair. But we do have a bunch of players, regardless of how they got out there. We have a bunch of players I don't know how many major championships we've got.
I'm also not talking about the top half of the tour. I'm talking about the bottom half of the tour. Why does James Piatt deserve world ranking points just because we signed a contract as a filler on this tour? Like,
does it matter? Like it's no different than you getting hand selected to play in, you know, or getting a sponsor exemption into which they're getting ready to get rid of. I don't know if you've heard the news on that. They're thinking about getting rid of the sponsor exemptions.
Good, they should.
Yeah, I think they want to get more guys that are qualifying every week, which that sounds great. But anyway, my point was, there's no difference between that and the guys getting selected to play on this tour. I mean, we get that every week
But if James Piatt signs a 3-year contract with LIV and he sucks ass, he's guaranteed 3 seasons on LIV and making at 14 events every year, where you get only certain.
But, well, like I said, I mean, I'm not saying how many world ranking points they should get, but I think that they need to start somewhere. I mean, look at the exemptions for, or the qualification process for somebody to get into a WGC event. I mean, how many times have we watched a WGC event? I mean, granted, I know they're not, it's different now than what it was, but we would see 20 players that you never heard of.
Yeah.
On the Asian Tour and the Sunshine Tour. And that was all because there was an agreement between the Sunshine and the Asian Tour. Hey, let's make this work. Let's grow the game. We're going to give you X amount of world ranking points. Who decided that? They decided that. They said, hey, we want to spread the game of golf across the world, and we're going to give this tour these amount of world ranking points when there was nobody on that tour that you ever heard of.
Sure.
So,
I didn't think any of that was right to begin with.
It wasn't right, but it's still in place. So
not again, anymore.
But for the most part, you still have guys getting into events because there's some type of relationship. But there was then, and that no one said anything about it then. And now all of a sudden we've got a tour that's got, you've got, you know, 10 to 12 major championship winners or championships and on this tour, yet they get nothing. And you had a Sunshine Tour event, an Asian Tour event, where you had no major champions and they were getting world ranking points and playing in WGC events. So
yeah, and that's why the system was changed. It also got rid of all the WGCs, but the system was changed. So now the Asian Tour doesn't get nearly as many points as they did.
But they still get points.
Still get points, yeah, but they don't get nearly as many. That's a fraction of what they used to get.
I'm not talking about how many the LIV Tour should get. I'm just saying they should get something. They should get something, especially now that the tour, like you said, I think the tour did themselves a disservice by having more of these no-cut event, or I should say, shouldn't call them no-cut events because they're
limited field
events, because it's playing right into what the LIV Tour is doing. It's like fitting their model. So they're not making a case for what they're arguing about. So again, I just think regardless of how they got there, you have the players that you have the pedigree of players they're playing, and there should be something given back to them. Now, we talked about this last week, how to get around the system. A lot of these top tier players that still have a high enough ranking should all get together and go play in some of these DP World events, some of these Asian Tour events. It. Yeah, they should do that. I mean, to kind of keep their world ranking points up. And that all that will do is just help, you know, solidify what they're doing on the LIV Tour and say, hey, we still have people that are on the that have world ranking points that are playing in these events and they're still playing well. Because again, as we've mentioned, if you go 2 or 3 years without playing in any sanctioned events, then all of a sudden you have a bunch of guys on that tour with no world ranking points, and then it's really, really difficult to argue that case. But so hopefully it sounds like those guys are picking up on that and they're like all going to get together and like, hey, let's get 10 or 12, 15 guys to go do these events so we can all make sure we're keeping our world ranking points up. But, anyway, I just feel like there should be something there.
Yeah.
What'd
you guys make of AK's return to LIV?
Not surprised. I mean, actually shot higher than I was. I said over par, and he definitely shot over par.
At the same time, I think there is a ton of rust there. You know, I think this thing happened pretty quickly for him to get out there. I don't think this was something where he had 6 months to 12 months to prepare.
Well, they approached him 2 years ago, is what Norman said.
I'm sure they did, but it was probably a nothing burger at that point. And then it progressed, and the talks reignited probably somewhat recently. I mean, guys had 12 years off. I mean, it's tough to come back from 12 years off and play at the top level. I thought what he did was pretty much on par with what we thought he was going to do. I think he does still have some skill. You know, he made some birdie. He put it this way. He looked like a great player that had a lot of rust. He had some good holes, and he had some really bad shots and some really bad holes as well. And I think ultimately it looks like he has something that he can still build off of. It looks like he still has some speed, still is able to get the ball around the course. His swing still looks good. The part that interests me the most is when he talks about, you know, his story. He wants to let his story out. I don't know if you guys noticed, but that left nostril is collapsed. It is absolutely collapsed. And I don't know if that's from a stroke, partying, what it is. I'm not going to sit here and try to speculate. Especially not on this format, because you don't know what anyone's been through, and to speculate and throw someone under the bus without knowing honestly what could be the culprit of that. You know, he looks rough. He looks like, you know, he was ridden hard and put up wet. So
I think more of my takeaways weren't even from his golf game. It was more of his body language he just seemed like neutered, you know, for like, it just wasn't the same AK. And obviously a lot has changed in 12 years. He wasn't that young whippersnapper that's bouncing around the golf course with a big smile on his face. And yeah, he does not look good. He looks way older than 38 years old. And he was quiet and he didn't really talk much. And he's still, you know, he gave a couple quotes here or there, but he still says he wants to, you know, give his story later. And I don't know. It just seemed, and not taking, I'm not even counting his scores. It just seemed really dull, in all honesty.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's very much more subdued. And I gotta be honest, I respect and I understand that he's coming back. He doesn't know what this is going to look like for him. You know, he's trying to get out there and become competitive again. And we all know that he has that drive in him. How far deep it is and, you know, where he's able to elevate that at this point is, you know, yet to be seen. But on the backside of it, I'm not surprised with the way he played. I respect the way he's approached it, quite frankly. I respect the way he's approached it because he didn't come out there after 12 years and be like, yeah, I'm best player out here. I'm back. I'm going to win this tournament this week. He was very cautious about some of the things he said. I think he approached it the right way. I think the sound bites he gave were very, you know, kind of muted with ultimately where his game is right now. If he's able to, and I'll say this, I think his comments and how he approached it are on par with where his game is right now. If he starts winning and starts being very competitive and we start to see that flair come back out of him, I'm totally good with that. I like the fact that he didn't have the big flair without the play. Like, he knew that there was a lot of unknown. And with anyone that's been gone that long coming back and trying to make a comeback, I mean, my God, you see, you know, retirees in other sports, they've been gone for maybe a year tops and they come back. This guy's been gone for 12. I mean, he's been gone for a decade. It's a long time. And once you're back in between the ropes, you hadn't been there in 12 years, the world's changed. These guys are hitting it 30 yards farther than they ever did. And He's now playing with some of those guys like, geez, this is a different game than what I left. So I'm pulling for him. I think he brings a unique following to the game of golf. I think he also brings a unique player to the game of golf. It opens it up a little bit. I mean, he has a full tat, long hair, or full sleeve, long hair. He plays his practice rounds in t-shirts. And, you know, it's not necessarily a decision that I would make, but I'm okay with it. I'm good with it. Let's bring in more players. Let's show the sport being more relaxed. Let's bring more people to the game. You see a similar thing done with some high-end management groups out there. You know, I think of Discovery Land with the way that they allow their members. There's no dress code at these properties, and the guys love it. They absolutely thrive in that atmosphere. So this could bring that to a much larger group of play out there. I mean, looking at some of the public courses, what do we do if we relax this a little bit? How many more players are we able to bring to the game? Does Anthony Kim start playing well? And all of a sudden it's like, hey, you know, I never considered myself a golfer. I have tattoos everywhere and you know, I like wearing t-shirts, but now I can go play a decent golf course and, you know, I'm hooked to the game and now we're bringing more players to the game. I mean, there's a lot of things to look at that are positives. I think if he's able to start playing well, it could mean some really cool things for the game overall.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of touched on all of that stuff. I thought the same thing, you know, watching him play. I was like, oh, he looks super rusty. Swing still looks pretty good, though, outside of the couple shanks that he had. I mean, the swing looked good. He just hit it off the hosel. But, I mean, it looked great. I mean, I was like, oh, there's AK swinging. Whoa, Shane. I'm sorry. So, I mean, it still looked good. He was slow like I was expecting. He was on the bottom. I mean, he was still he was up to 170 ball speed. But, you know, for that guy, like if you're not striking the ball as well as you can and you're at 170, you're that's becoming the PGA Tour average right at 170. So if you're not a, should say PGA Tour, I don't know what the LIV Tour average is now, but
We'll call it tour average overall.
Tour average overall is one, you know, is right at 170 or in the upper 160s, like,
I think. It's 173.
That sounds right, yeah.
So the tour average has moved up to 173. I know a couple years ago it was like upper 160s. So now
it's just north of 170.
Okay. Well, then he's below average. So if he's not hitting his irons well, dude, what are you going to do? What are you bringing to the table?
Yeah, he always had a historical short game. I mean, he was nasty around the greens and putted really well. And he made some good putts this week, but he hit some putts that were awful. I mean, awful. I saw one 30-footer that was like 6 feet short. I mean, he looked like a pro-am competitor at times. But I think I think it's still in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has an opportunity right now to engage. I mean, this is the big thing. Is he there just to take the payday, or does he engage? If he engages, and it's not something that I think we're going to see in the next 3 months, if he has an opportunity to keep playing and he engages, I think over a 12-month period of time, you can get that game back. I think he's got that in him. He was one of the world's best players at one time.
Yeah, and you don't forget it.
You don't forget it. I think it's a matter of reps. And I would also say that, you know, he was probably working out in tournament conditions over what, the last 60 days? Like, all right, I'm going to do this. I got to get back to practicing. You can't find it in 60 days.
Yeah.
You can find it in 365 days. You can't find it in 60 days. So if he goes back and he engages, he's like, all right, I'm back to play tour golf. I'm back on my regimented practice schedule, workout schedule. I'm not partying. And the one thing I feel like, especially when they talk about his story, pure speculation here, no knowledge of it, that potentially, you know, he was partying pretty hard and he had a family. He had his daughter. He really seems engaged with his daughter, which I love seeing a good dad out there. So, and that's anywhere. That doesn't just happen PGA Tour. That's just period. Love, as a dad, you love to see someone engaging and having fun with their kids. It's just rewarding, and all three of us can say the same thing. But he's now able to come out of his shell a little bit. He now has social media, and we've seen some posts of social media. Most all of them surround his family. Pure speculation is that he was partying hard until he had his family, and he has a new outlook on life. Now he has an opportunity to go back and find himself professionally again. Is he able to engage that properly? Is he able to engage that the way he once did on the PGA Tour, becoming one of the top players in the world? It seems like he's been settled down. He's certainly a little bit more muted, as we've already discussed. But again, I have no idea if any of that is true, but from an outsider looking in, looks like he had a really fun time there for a number of years, never had a job, had enough money, played golf when he wanted to. And now it's like, all right, let's go back. I have a family now. I'm grounded at home. Now let's see what I can go do with the game. And I hope that's what happens. I'd love to see the guy start playing well again.
Yeah, I agree. For facts sake, I looked it up. Yeah, average ball speed right now on the PGA Tour is 173.02. If he averaged 170, and that was kind of more like the high water mark from what I noticed, if you average 170, you're 135th on tour.
That's slow
on the PGA Tour.
Hey, there's a lot of guys out there,
and he'll get faster.
There's a lot of guys out there making a ton of money at that ball speed.
Sure.
Yeah.
Brian Harman has never seen 170 other than when he looks at his bank account.
Yeah. Every week.
I felt like I had another AK thought, but I can't remember what it was. I don't know, live thought. So did you see they had 4.5 million viewers this week?
They did.
They didn't fucking have $4.5 million viewers.
Say.
They have a new partnership with Caffeine TV, and Caffeine TV said they had 4.5 million viewers.
Oh, that's a lie.
Yeah, and I'm 6'5" and hit the ball 400 yards.
And you have 185 ball speed.
I had never heard of Caffeine TV. If they can't get 4.5 million on YouTube or the CW, there's no fucking way they're getting $4.5 million on a service I have never heard of. Caffeine TV.
Yeah, I agree with that.
There's no way those numbers are real.
I just heard of Caffeine TV right now.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before, ever.
If people can't find them on YouTube, they're not finding them on Caffeine.
I have a feeling it's like a late night TV channel, like 12 to 6 a.m.
I mean, they might just...
It's like people that are tuning in for AK, it's more going to be the American group of viewers than it is going to be worldwide. I mean, not to say they doesn't have some worldwide presence, but we're the ones that have, you know, idolized this guy and put him into that.
Sure.
Best way to say it.
He was like, we all remember him in the 08 Ryder Cup. He was an American hero, you know, like kicked the shit out of Sergio. And he's an American cult hero.
How old is he? Late 30s?
He's 38.
38, yeah.
I did love when he walked up on the range the first time, and Pat Perez, who's one of the only guys that was on tour when he was on tour. I mean, there's very few players out there that even know AK. Saw him, and Pat Perez was like, man, they kind of said the good old boys line of like, oh man, they let you out here. And then Pat Perez looks like, hey, thanks for dressing up.
Wearing t-shirt and sneakers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did
I will say the wild card logo they made for him was pretty sick though.
Yeah.
Did y'all see that?
Yeah.
Had the ace in one, the AK, but it was like, you know, ace and king. It was like, it looked like a card with the logo in the middle. That was pretty sick. I did like that.
Did you see, was it Rom? Like, didn't know who he was at first and pulled out a Sharpie like he was going to give him an autograph?
I heard that. I don't know if that's true or not. But yeah, I heard, because there's zero chance that all the news hadn't traveled at that point. Like, Rom knew. I think that was memes.
Rom would have been in high school when AK was like in his heyday. I mean,
he may have been in middle school.
Maybe. Yeah, you're right.
All right. So look at this. I just pulled up. I went back the OWGR.
Here we go again.
And this is the first week. This is January 2nd of 2011. Okay. AK was 31st in the world. Listen to some of these names. The players on the PGA Tour are different. I'm talking about, like, obviously the players are different, but I'm talking about like the type of player on the PGA Tour. Lee Westwood was number one in the world at the time. Tiger Woods, Martin Keimer was third, Phil Mickelson was fourth, Graham McDowell was fifth. Sounds like a live roster. Jim Furyk was sixth, Steve Stricker was seventh in the world, Paul Casey eighth, Luke Donald ninth, Rory McIlroy 10th, Ian Poulter was the 11th ranked player in the world, Ernie Els was 12th, Matt Kuchar was 13th. These are all slow guys that don't hit it anywhere.
Yeah, I know. I was just about to say the same thing. I mean, what year was that? 2011?
2011.
13 years later. It's changed.
The profile of player is very, very different. Robert Allenby was a top 20 player in the world.
Not a long guy.
Tim Clark was 26th in the world. I just think the game of golf is very different than it was.
And it's only progressed. I mean, if you go back another 11 years to the year 2000, look at the OWGR. I'm sorry.
Let's do it. This is a fun little.
I mean, I'm sure you're going to see the same trend. It's going to be a lot of guys that are slower for the most part. I mean, Tiger is going to be up there. He's going to be number one.
Yeah. So here, number one is January 9th, 2000. Tiger, Duval, Colin Montgomery.
Slow.
Davis Love.
Love pounded it.
He was long. Ernie Els, Vijay Singh, they all pounded it. Lee Westwood.
Slow.
Nick Price was still the eighth ranked player in the world in 2000.
Slow.
Marco Mira was ninth.
Slow.
Phil Mickelson was 10th.
He hit it hard.
Furyk was 11th.
Slow.
Sergio was 12th.
Sergio's an enigma.
Then you had Justin Leonard, Hal Sutton, Jesper Parnevik, Carlos Franco, John Houston.
All those guys were slow.
Darren Clark, Jeff Maggart.
Carlos Franco hit the golf ball, though.
Yeah, that's a smooth swing.
God, that was that's
played
funny.
A practice round with him at the sectionals one year. That was kind of cool. Didn't really talk to him at all. That's not a whole lot of conversation in that practice round. But he was a smooth cat. He was kind of like the most interesting man in the world. Like, he could be doing those Dos Equis commercials. Yeah. Like, more so than like, God, what's the dude's name that does the
Miguel Angel?
Miguel Angel, yeah. Jimenez. Like, Franco was like really, he was a smooth cat. Like, that dude, he got it. He got it. He was smooth, but like, he just wasn't as vocal and, in your face, but.
All right. Let's see. Anything else in the world of golf this past week? It was kind of somewhat slow week.
Yeah.
One thing real quick. Jake Knapp continues to impress. Looking at his statistics, they are really, really good. He doesn't have a massive weakness in his game. If you look at his stats on the PGA Tour this year, they're incredibly impressive where he is in relation to everyone else. Coming from a guy that's first year out there. Finishes, what, third, fourth?
Yeah, I'm on my T3, T4.
Yeah.
T4.
Continues to impress.
Yeah, that's a hell of a follow-up after a big win, life-changing experience. You never know how that's going to go.
Yep.
Playing with Rory for 2 days in the premier group. Actually, I think he played with it 3 days. I think they shot the same score, and they played together on Saturday again, I believe. So
he beat Rory.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of good things to take away from him. So outside of that, I'm welcome to get to my picks if you'd like.
All right. I don't have the updated scoreboard because that's on a different computer that I do not have with me here today. So McLean did win.
Did I? Man.
Fucking Shane Lowry. I think I would have won. I'm sure Shane didn't gag it.
Well, luckily I had Eric Van Rooyen.
Yeah, that helps. That was a big flip there on the final round.
I know, because I was in third place going into it.
So, all right, we got Arnold Palmer Invitational. Obviously a very familiar golf course on the PGA Tour.
Big golf course.
Signature event, 69 players, a small cut, a bunch of the top guys. I guess Tony Finau skipping it, which is weird. But other than that, all the other guys are there, present and accounted for. Scottie Scheffler has a mallet on the putting green this week.
Thank God.
Yeah.
See what he games tomorrow. But sorry to our listeners. You're not going to gain any. You'll hear our picks, but you're not going to be able to actually utilize them, since you'll hear this on Thursday after the tournament starts. So apologize there. Paul Woodson can't use my picks this week to beat me.
Well, at Finau, one of his 19 kids has a recital, so he can't be there.
He's got a baptism.
So starting from the top, now we're here. Victor Hovland, 9,900. Moving down, Max Homa, 9,200. Wyndham Clark, 8,500. Sahith Theegala, 8,100. Ricky Fowler, 71. And Nikolai Højgaard, 72. Went with a lot of big hitters. I mean, this is a big golf course, so with a lot of big hitters for the week. I think it's going to be a good event. Like, a lot of these guys are familiar playing this golf course, especially look at Victor, Sahith, Max Homa, Fowler, Wyndham. I don't know how often Nikolai has played in that event, but he's been obviously trending in a very good way. So looking for a good week out of these boys.
Okay. Hey, Mike, what's the point total at? Or
I don't have it updated because it's on a different computer. But McLean's in first.
Is he? He took over first now.
You're in second. I'm in third. I know that.
Did I take over last week?
You did take over last week. So you just increased your lead this week.
Oh, right, we need to change that.
So I'll go second. I came in second this week.
Don't worry, Jay. There's no payout.
There is $100.
I think we said 1,000.
I think we said 1,000.
You definitely didn't say that. We can definitely look this up. You know, this is a podcast that's recorded. So
we said a lot last year too, and it was like finishing the round, and you guys threw your car, threw your clubs in the trunk, and took off in your cars.
But we pressed. We had that late season press, and we just squashed the bet. You won one, we won a bet. You know, so
there was no vote on squashing. Like, this was not something that was brought up, and it was like, let's negate.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was a 1-1. You know, one up, one down. Finished there.
Yeah, really, really good. Not really good.
You had us 2-0, but we flipped you.
really good stuff.
All right, so my guys, I would say, fit in two. I looked at three things, and they all fit in two or all and or all three of these categories. One, playing well. Two, hit the ball a long ways. Three, great long iron players. So most of my guys are in those buckets right there. So I kind of went three low guys and three high was my strategy this week. I thought a couple of value picks down the board. I'm going to go $6,500. Patrick Rogers is playing well. Guy matches it. Hits his long irons well. So I like Patrick Rogers there at $6,500. I then go up to Minwoo Lee, $6,600. Coming off a great finish. Again, just a steal, I think, for him at $6,600. I like his game to fit this golf course. Then I go up to $7,200. He's going to have a breakout here at some point or on tour at some point. I don't think it's going to be this week, but Steven Yeager, $7,200. Again, he's hitting his long irons great if you look at some of the statistics. So he's gained a ton of yards on his game over the last 18 months as well. He's picking up a bunch of speed. Then I go to my three horses. You have Victor Hovland, as do I. He's got a new coach. I think he's going to be spurred on. Again, just flushes his irons. So I like Hovland. Then I have Rory McIlroy, $10,600. I think he's getting there. He's not going to win. I think we see him in contention, top five this week. He plays well at this golf course. He hits those high, towering, long irons on a firm, fast golf course. I like that. And then your winner this week at $8,900, Will Zalatoris.
He's been playing better.
Wow. I think he's prime. This golf course fits him perfect. He's one of the best long iron players in the game.
He had a top 10 finish here in 2021. So, yeah. Seems to be playing some good golf. His back's not hurting him.
Yep. So.
I like this. I like a lot of those picks. All right. I'll jump into mine. I'll start from the bottom. Eric Van Rooyen, with the joggers and all, the guy's been playing some good golf. I mean, second place this past week, and then eighth at the Vedanta, and then a bunch of other top 25s there prior to that. So he's playing some good golf at $6,600 with a limited field and a smaller cut. If he plays as well as he's been playing and you give him four rounds, I'm pretty confident in what his ability is showing at this point. Then Christian Bezuidenhout, again, another guy that I feel like he knows how to make birdies. He's swinging well. He swings the club really, really well. And he puts it well too. He missed the cut last week, 70-71 at the Bear Trap. I mean, it's not like he played, you know, terrible. He shot 70-71. So he's playing some good golf. He missed by one or two. Playing some good golf, 24th, 28th, 20th, second at the American Express, sixth at the Sanderson Farms in the fall. So playing some good golf for $7,000 price tag. Then I jump up to Hogarth, where, you know, McLean mentioned he's playing good golf, makes a lot of birdies. And then Fitzpatrick. he's, I don't know what this guy is. He's kind of different, but he does grade out. He grades out good here.
He's got a good track record.
He's got a good track record. He's a good iron player too. I mean, he's finished in the top 15 in the last five events, and he did miss the cut in 2018, but the guy likes this place. So, you know, and that's playing with a bigger field, 130 man field. So I like his chances here. Then I kind of start jumping up to my two heavy hitters, at $9,200, Mr. Max Homa. Again, another guy who likes this place. He's been playing some good golf. He didn't play great at, the Waste Management 73-69, but again, you know, you missed the cut by a shot or two. You're still playing good golf. You just probably had one or two bad holes. And last but not least, $11,300.
Mm.
Your winner with a new putter. He's going to have the honeymoon phase with this new putter, and that's all I need, because we know how good he is with the ball striking. And if I put a putter in front of him that he feels he has no bad memories of, and he putts halfway decent, just halfway decent, he wins. So, which, and this course is, you know, tailor-made for this guy too. I mean, it seems like every damn course is tailor-made for this guy, but, he did win here. He won here 2 years ago, finished fourth last year, 15th, in 2020. And I think he's probably hitting as good as he's ever hit it. And just a matter of him making putts. So,
like it. The big dog, the high dollar guy.
The big dog.
Scheffler.
The big dog.
I love it. All right. Time for our Puerto Rico Open picks. Who wants to go first there?
What?
you didn't do picks for the opposite field event this week?
I didn't realize it was even a thing.
Yep, there you go. I got Bob McIntyre to win that. So okay, write that down.
You're the only one that did any research on that in this group. I can promise that.
I actually didn't do any research. I just glanced at the field real fast, and he was the first name that I knew, so I picked him.
Good pick, Mike.
Thank you.
Good points.
All right, gents. Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you again to the Mid-Atlantic PGA. And we'll see you guys next week. Cheers.
Cheers, boys.